This is Dr. What, Dr. Where, Stories of Rural Medicine. It's the podcast exploring what it's like to live, work, and train in rural medicine across regional Victoria. So you're thinking about becoming a GP, or perhaps even taking it to the next level and becoming a rural generalist. Well, there's a lot of exciting things happening with this specialty right now. The return to college-led training, rural generalist potentially becoming a protected title, and lots more new things to look forward to. If you're thinking about a GP fellowship, you'll already know there's two colleges, the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners and the Australian College of Rural and Remote Medicine. Becoming a fellow of either college enables you to practice as a GP anywhere in Australia, but there are subtle points of difference. In this episode, you'll hear from people from both colleges, as well as trainees who decided to opt for each college. Like Dr. Carl Barker, he decided to enter ACRM's program because of his background growing up in regional Queensland and is currently practicing in central Victoria.
Yeah, I'm from a rural area. I grew up on a farm. My career before medicine was veterinary science, so, you know, worked as a horse vet for quite a while before I came back and did medicine. So working and having a general mixture of talents or procedures or skills is kind of what I've always strived to be able to do. And, you know, wanting to be in a rural area for the remainder of my life, I kind of wanted to optimize that. And ACRM allows you to do that. It's a pathway that allows you to get an advanced skill, and it supports you through that. And so you become one of those GPs that can do a lot of things as opposed to someone who just does GP consulting alone. And I think that the fact that you can do something else makes your job more, I guess, interesting and variable. And hopefully at the end of your career, you can feel a bit more achieved, I guess, or fulfilled. So that's kind of why I went down the ACRM pathway. Yeah, it's been good. It's been difficult though.
What's been the support like from the college, both in terms of becoming a parent in the last sort of year and a half, but also from the advanced skills perspective, trying to work through a pathway to develop that advanced skill that you have a specific interest in?
Yeah, so I have a really great mentor at ACRM, and, you know, they're very supportive, and they're the ones that are, you know, reminding me the fact that parenthood comes first. So that's really, it's good to have that, because even though you tell yourself that, it's good to be reminded that it is okay to be a parent first and then do the training program a second. So that's really, really supportive. My advanced skill was ED. I worked 12 months as an ED registrar in Bendigo Health last year, and that was really great. I had no troubles at all getting through that, even though it was shift work and what have you, and stressful as it was pretty well all right. And this year I'm continuing working at the Bendigo Health ED as well as being a GP in Castlemaine, and the Bendigo Health have allocated me a role every Thursday, which has been fantastic. So that's that continuity of shifts that I know that I'll have that shift there. They know that I'll be there, and that works really well for both of us. So yeah, everyone's been really supportive, and no one's been pressurizing me to, you know, when are you sitting exams, when are you sitting exams. It's been good like that.
From your perspective, is there any tips you'd have for someone who's looking at both colleges and perhaps struggling to decide which one to enter into?
Yeah, I guess it's what are you looking to do? What's your outcome? What's the target? So for me, like, I want to be someone who works in a rural area. So, you know, my aim is to live and work in around Bendigo. So that's, you know, working in Castlemaine. That's hopefully once things settle down, I'm hoping to do, you know, shifts up in the regional areas like Swan Hill, etc. So that's my aim. A second advanced skill potentially down the track, like doing anaesthetics. So it all depends on what your aim is. If you wanted to be a GP who does obstetric, then ACRM will support that a lot more. If you wanted to be a GP who does skin, you know, RSCG will certainly be very adequate for that. And I have colleagues who are fantastic skin doctors who are RSCGP fellows. So it all depends on what your target is. because the advanced skills are very well supported through ACRM, and you end up becoming a very good fellow, a very good trainee at the end of the day, due to the intensity of the training program, the level of knowledge you need to know to pass the exams. So you end up being very well trained if you're looking to go towards those advanced skills. So that's kind of my tip. It's like, what is your target? What do you want to do as a GP? And even if you wanted to do an ED as well as being RACGP, you can still do that through RACGP. They both have their pros and cons. At the end of the day, becoming a GP, you both become a GP at the end of the day within either program. Anecdotally, maybe easier to go through RACGP, less requirements. The exams may not be as tricky. Doing ACRM and having an advanced skill, I feel in the long run will be advantageous for me because it gives me that flexibility. But you can get that flexibility through RACGP as well. It just, it's not mainly recognized for that, but you can still pursue it that way. But at the end of the day, becoming a GP and completing a training program and then getting out there and just doing it. So, working as a GP and trying your best to help people out. So whichever you feel is going to support your end needs the best, then just do it.
So what's it like training through the RACGP? Dr. Addison Davis is an RACGP trainee in Mansfield. He says the flexibility of the program really helped him decide.
There's a few things. One is the flexibility around the way that you do your training and it being quite a decent focus on both aspects of rural generalism, which is the general practice component and then the hospital and emergency components. There's quite a good breadth of additional rural skills that you can do as part of RACGP, and they're all relatively well supported and funded through the streams locally in Victoria. And so for, practicing rural generalism within sort of the southern states of Australia, the program through the Royal Australian College of GPs just was really well structured, was flexible in the way that you can structure your years, your hospital years, and then your in-clinic years, and the sort of degree of what you can do as your advanced skill.
You're in your final year, hopefully, to becoming a fellow of the college. What's been the experience with the college sort of plotting out that career pathway, getting all of the experience that you need to become a GP in a place like Mansfield?
I mean, my process started in Mansfield all the way back through my university when I was part of the Rural Clinical School, and I actually spent a whole year in Mansfield as a medical student on my placement as part of the extended rural cohort. And that fed quite nicely into the sort of hospital system, and then doing the rural intern program, Murray to Mountains, which has been replicated all throughout Victoria now, which I came back to Mansfield again in my first year as a doctor, and then subsequently had a really good pathway through the local health services in the slightly bigger hospitals of having set up streams where you could get the rotations you needed as part of your requirements to enter training onto the GP pathway, and then allowing you to get the emergency components that you need to fulfill the rural generalist pathway, and then guiding you into those advanced skills, which were, placements through the same hospital, and then that hospital feeding into the towns, of which Mansfield's in its catchment. So it was actually quite a good natural flow and progression. And most of those pathways have been quite solidified now, where you can sign on to a certain stream, knowing that the next sort of 2 to 4 years of your employment and your pathway towards rural generalism is sort of already set in stone, and allows you to just sort of step through that process quite easily.
When you were plotting out your career earlier on in your training, was there much of a decision-making process deciding between the two GP colleges?
I guess the underlying requirements for both are fairly similar in the fact that they both have the need for an additional rural skill. They both have the emergency medicine and the sort of hospital components. I guess the one thing for me, just hearing from other colleagues around their time and the support that they got throughout that program. Initially, when the training was led by different training organizations that weren't under the colleges. And so being an ACRM or a RACGP trainee was pretty much the same in terms of the training that you got in the early years as a registrar. But now that they've separated out and speaking to other colleagues, there seems to be quite different experiences now in terms of the training and support, the amount of sort of on the ground sort of assessments and feedbacks and things that happen. So for me, it was really, I guess, about the flexibility, but really quite suited what I was aiming to do. Outside of whichever college you do rural journalism through, there's now through the Victorian Rural Journalist Program, there's really good pathways set up, which feed into, you know, both colleges of whichever college you want to try and achieve fellowship from. I'd say it's really about finding what works for you and what sort of practice you would like to do. There's pros and cons of both. And I think if you were the kind of registrar who wanted to go out in the absolute wilderness and, you know, quite remote, that maybe, you know, ACRM might deliver some additional sort of remote things that maybe aren't covered under the curriculum as part of RACGP. But, you know, they're now sort of both got standards that they have to meet. And so it's about, you know, what works best for you and how you want your learning structured.
So what do the colleges have to say? Well, ACRM are keen to encourage aspiring rural generalists to apply to their program. As their Regional Director of Training for Victoria, Dr. Angela Stratton, outlines, the advanced skills you develop as a rural generalist are incredibly valuable to rural communities.
So a rural generalist, they're basically highly skilled doctors who are trained to provide all the different types of medical care that you could need in a small rural town. So the idea is that rural GPs have been around forever. However, the title rural generalist, I guess, is relatively new to actually encompass that they are a particular type of subspecialty of general practice. They have all those additional skills such as emergency care, they can do hospital-based care, as well as providing that comprehensive, you know, primary care. And then rural generalists also have advanced skills in at least one different area. And that can be anything such as anaesthetics, obstetrics, or to the more community-based ones such as mental health or palliative care.
There's a lot of change in this space to do with the Victorian Rural Generalist Program, as well as a push to make rural generalist a protected title. But is the advanced skill component of being an ACRM fellow the sort of key point of difference between that and the RACGP?
So I think one of the differences is that all ACRM fellows are rural generalists, and that what makes us quite diverse. So ACRM is the only medical college that actually specialises in rural and remote healthcare. And we do that in terms of what's important for looking after our communities, because that's actually our college vision, is to have the right doctors in the right place with the right skills that they need to provide rural and remote people with excellent healthcare. So one of the things about ACRM is that we embed that rural and remote training from day one throughout the whole 4 years of the program. So although sometimes the focus might be on the advanced skill, actually the other 3 years of an ACRM training program are equally as important, because you're learning how to practice all those different core medical skills that GPs and rural hospital doctors have, but you're doing it in that rural and remote environment from day one. So the ASTs are also vital to our community, because they often will be able to provide services to those communities to prevent people to necessarily have to travel, which I guess media platforms will be, you know, very interested in the high profile in terms of rural obstetric services, things like that. However, we know with an aging population, being able to have access to palliative care services and those types of skills in your community are also really important. With regards to the Victorian Rural Generalist Program, that's a fantastic initiative that's been going for a few years now. And what they are doing is really working with both colleges to create training opportunities on the ground that meet the needs of the rural generalist trainees. So because rural generalist trainees don't just stay in one hospital in one department for the majority of their training. They need to go across all different types of hospitals, different rotations, different primary cares, in and out of regional centres to rural areas. The Victorian Rural Generalist Program just helps to create those opportunities and streamline the program for the trainees so that they don't deliver the training themselves. They're working with both of us colleges to create those opportunities.
How do those advanced skills help prepare you for day-to-day general practice as well?
So really, I think it's easier to think about that in terms of if I even describe to you what my day-to-day looks like. And that gives you a picture of what life can be like for a rural generalist. Although I often say a rural generalist, their day is as unique as the communities in which they serve, because what I do in my community and what my community needs is very different to what another community might need. But for me, I would start my day attending our small local hospital, and we would usually, there's a group of us that would do the ward round and see any of the patients that have been admitted overnight or might be with us. And those patients can range from anything such as a 20-year-old with community acquired pneumonia to actually someone who might be admitted for end of life care. So there's quite a diversity in the patients that we see. After we've done the ward round, we actually just walk across the road to our clinic, where we will see our booked primary care patients for the day. Usually there's one of us nominated to be on call for our hospital, where we have an urgent care centre, which in Victoria are essentially small rural emergency departments. And we might have to go back and forwards to the urgent care centre to see what happens, whether it might be something such as a laceration, or it could be an x-ray. We take our own x-rays if people have sprained ankles, or we also then might have more big emergencies that come in and we have to organise retrieval. So that's kind of the basis of your core rural generalist life. And then depending on what you might have as your advanced skills is how you might complement that. So one of the rural generalists in our community is a rural generalist anaesthetist. So maybe one of his days he might actually be doing theatre lists with a visiting surgeon in our local operating theatre. I myself have GP obstetrics and used to work, unfortunately we don't have a birthing service anymore, but we had our own local birthing service, plus I used to work in the regional centre in their obstetric ward, but now I do emergency medicine as well and work in the regional hospital. We have other ones that in terms of do palliative care as well and can provide those. I mean, all rural generalists can do palliative care, but sometimes those more complex problems that you might need to solve is when you have patients who are in their final stages of life, and we have a RG who can provide those services. So really, as a collective, when all of us have our different advanced skills, we can increase the level of care that our community can have closer to home. And you'll often find that that's how rural generalists work, rather than some specialties where maybe say, well, I have this skill, where will I go to use my skill? It's often the other way around, in that a rural generalist will be in a community and think, what skills do my community need? And then we'll actually go and get the skills that they need so that they can provide that comprehensive care closer to home for their communities. What I find is our point of difference for ACRM is that rural training from day one, and learning from rural generalists themselves as much as possible in how to, you know, be safe, confident and independent working anywhere in Australia. So some people do think then an ACRM fellowship means you can only work rurally, and that's not the case. While we train rurally, you can still work in the middle of Melbourne when you post fellowship if you wanted to. However, we do know, because ACRM fellows are passionate about rural and remote medicine, that 82% of our ACRM doctors who've trained through the Australian General Practice Training Program actually continue to serve rural communities 5 years post-training. So it really is, it does create a passion and things amongst you if you train with ACRM. Now, to answer your question about college-led training, this has been really exciting for ACRM. So with ACRM training, there's actually a number of different ways that you can complete our fellowship. So the fellowship itself, the requirements are the same depending which pathway you're on, but there's a number of different funded or self-funded pathways that you can do your training. So for us, prior to college-led training, we were actually already training 60% of our own registrars through a college-led program we were running. So really, we were bringing in the remaining 40% into the fold of the program that we were already running. So it was quite exciting for ACRM to now have all our trainees in one group that are all coming under our college-led program.
I guess one of the concerns that students and junior doctors might have about returning to college-led training is it was previously a whole bunch of different RTOs spread out across the entire country, and obviously they were focusing on developing local solutions for that. And I understand that a big part of this shift has been developing training pathways that sort of are tailored to the region in which you're training as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really exciting that something that ACRM have done now with our regional training networks is that we are developing the local training options. So although we have the national program and the national education program that runs parallel to that, there is a regional flair applied to everything to ensure that our local trainees are getting what they need, but then also the unique aspects of the different communities in which we work. So as you would know, that training and working in Victoria is very different to training and working in far Northern Territory. However, an ACRM trainee, when they fellow, we'd like them to be able to work anywhere in Australia. So how do we do that? Now, one of the things that every ACRM trainee has is their own individual training officer and their own individual medical educator that all work together with the trainee to plan their training journey and provide that balance between meeting the core requirements that the trainees need to meet for their fellowship, but also making sure that they're covering their interests or any particular skills they'd like to get along the way. Now, although the benefit of the RTOs was that local component, one of the benefits of college-led training is that trainees now can also train anywhere in Australia. So, for example, if you did want to still work and live in Victoria, but you thought, actually, I wouldn't mind having a six-month rotation in some tropical medicine in far north Queensland, we could support you to do that. And you could go and do that rotation and come back to Victoria, or in some cases move around anywhere, might be permanently that people decide to move. So that is one of the benefits of college-led training now, is that it is very flexible where people would like to work. One of the things that I'm really excited about with college-led training is, as I said, ACRM embeds that rural and remote training right from day one, which actually means that our curriculum is quite diverse. We have to cover so many different curriculum areas. And now the opportunity that we've had, now that we have all our trainees training with the college, is that we have a two-year education program that works in four semesters. And we've mapped that to our curriculum. So that means, once again, no matter where you're training in Australia, you can be sure that your training is being complemented by our education program that covers the entire curriculum. So maybe if you are working in an area that might not have as much exposure to a particular area, we'll make sure that we top that up and complement it. So you can be sure that your education with ACRM matches what you need to learn for the curriculum, which is really, really exciting for us.
And lastly, here's the RACGP's Rural Council Chair, Associate Professor Michael Clements, who says the flexibility in the RACGP's program can be a real appealing feature to trainees.
We know that medical students and junior doctors thinking about general practice have some choice. And just in the same way that they chose which university to study at, they can choose which college to work with to prepare them for their rural practice. And in the same way, whether you choose RACGP or ACRM, you end up with the same qualification at the end. And that's a fellowship that allows you to work both in general practice and in hospital environments with additional skills or advanced skills, and providing services in the rural communities after the right support and the right training to meet those community needs. Both the colleges lead to a provider number that can be used nationally, and both the colleges will give you access to some of the higher payment scales within some of the state government bodies in terms of pay rates, and give you the same credentialing opportunities at different hospitals. So the end point is the same, but how we get there is different. So RACGP is very clearly focused on community general practice and the role that the GP plays in managing chronic and disease and preventative health in the community. So we place a large priority of time spent in community general practice with a minimum of the 18 months. And we also then give the support for additional training, for example, with the College of Emergency Medicine to do an advanced skill, additional skill in that, with the College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists to do an advanced skill in birthing, we give all of these opportunities to help the doctor feel ready to be able to deliver that service. So the first point is both the colleges will give you the same qualification at the end. Now, the second point is that we unashamedly do have a heavy focus on the time spent in community general practice and do give that as a priority, and that's one point of difference. We also have a point of difference in terms of the flexibility. So we know that many junior doctors start off with good rural intent and good plans and intentions of being a rural remote doctor and serving their community, but life changes. And it may be that they don't want to do their GP time and their advanced skill time at the same block. So for our trainees, if they start off with the intent of being a rural generalist, but halfway through find that they've had children or they've got to have a carer role for their parents, or they've got reasons why their spouse needs to be in a city for employment, our GP trainees can actually finish off the fellowship with the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners and come back to their rural generalist ticket later. So ACRM is an all or nothing. You do the full 4 years or you don't get anything. With us, it's a matter of if things happen, if things change, if people are seeking flexibility and an opportunity to, I guess, step out and pause before they do their additional skill, we can allow them to do that. Overall, we're also very proud of our face-to-face education component. So we've invested a lot of time and money to make sure that even our rural trainees will actually get small group learning, face-to-face learning and workshops where we're actually spending time teaching them in those regional areas so that they can accumulate those skills. And so we continue to provide our rural doctors with all of the support that urban registrars get as well in terms of access to all of our resources, teaching, training, our support for new fellows, our trainee groups and advisory groups. We've got the benefit of a national program that really spreads and covers every single postcode.
In terms of the advanced skills, so that's done in collaboration with other colleges. How does that work in terms of skilling you up to become an advanced skills practitioner or perhaps a rural generalist?
So we train every GP with an FRA CGP that enables them to work as a GP in any postcode in Australia, whether that be the middle of the Northern Territory or Melbourne. What we then do is we offer the additional skill so that they can provide hospital-like services in a rural and remote area. So that might commonly be emergency medicine for a year or obstetrics for a year or anaesthetics for a year. And so the trainee may do their general practice time first and then do the additional skill, or they might choose to stay in hospital and do that additional skill as part of hospital. And things like the obstetric additional skill gives them the ability to contribute to a birthing service. It will enable them to do low to moderate risk births, cesareans. They might choose to do anaesthetics and deliver anaesthetics in the rural and remote areas. So with our training, it's sort of broken up into those components, the hospital component and the community general practice component, so that once you've done both, it allows you to pick a small town, any town that suits you, and contribute not just to the chronic disease, the mental health, the preventative health management, the childhood immunizations, the day-to-day care that we do in our traditional general practices, but actually contribute to the roster in, say, the rural hospital's emergency department, to their inpatient ward, or in some cases contribute to their mental health services or their internal medicine services or their pediatric clinics, and also into surgery, obstetrics and anaesthetics. It's really valuable to consider all of your options when choosing not just which career, but which college. We know that our trainees need flexibility and they need a bit of variety as well. And so we're very keen to work with the trainees during their fellowship journey, tailor the program to suit them, whether they need to start off in an urban area before moving rural, whether they're ready to move rural and stay in one town for the whole of their training. We're certainly able to work with the trainees and find the pathway that suits them and maybe take a pause in the middle of training and delay that additional skill. But in the meantime, getting their fellowship and enabling them to have an unrestricted provider number straight away. So we're very keen to tailor our program to meet the trainees' need, but also the community need.
Moving on to the college-led training, that's been a pretty big change this year. Overall, how has that been going?
We're just thrilled to have college-led training back again. Many years ago, we used to be responsible for setting the standards and training. For a while there, we've had to hand over to regional training organisations where we as a college set the standards and the curriculum, but it was up to other agencies to deliver and deliver in their own way with their own policies and their own interpretations of policies. Now, they've done wonderful work, and we can certainly thank the RTOs across the country for what they've done for our rural and remote communities, but we are pleased as a college to have this back under our wing now. What we've been able to achieve is some nationally consistent approaches to how our trainees are exposed to different practices and how they're managed. So now we can have trainees that may start in Melbourne City and then do a 6-month or a 12-month placement in Alice Springs. We've got trainees that might start in Brisbane and then go in northwest Queensland for 6 months to a year in Mount Isa to do an additional skill or work in one of the community controlled health centres there. So we've got a national program, a national pathway. There are no barriers to movement across state borders anymore. And what this means is that we can really tailor the trainee experience according to what they need and what they want. We also are very pleased that we're able to implement the policies directly, and we're able to make sure that trainees can be given the best support. We have inbuilt flexibility. As the rural chair, I get examples brought to me where a policy hasn't enabled somebody to work in two different states at the same time with two different provider numbers. And we're able to resolve that because we're both the training deliverer now and also the standard setter. And we've been able to sort that situation out and make sure that trainees no longer have these border barriers like they had in the past. So we're providing a nationally consistent approach. The trainee journey is nationally consistent, but with local variability. So we listen to the medical educators and the planners on the ground. We're working with the different workforce agencies to make sure we're meeting community need. And so we've been very pleased with the feedback that we've had so far. We've been told that our trainees are appreciating the amount of face-to-face education we're delivering, the small group learning, the consistency in the training package nationally. We've absolutely recruited all that we need for our medical educators to deliver these services. And we've been able to streamline the supervisor payment systems, working with the Department of Health to make sure that supervisors and practices are getting their payments on time and in a very efficient way. So we're very pleased with how we've landed. We're very pleased with the positive feedback about how it's been going. That doesn't mean that we don't have more work to do. And we as a college are absolutely interested in hearing from trainees or organisations that feel that there's still some improvements in what we can do. And they're very welcome to contact the college or me, particularly if they're in a rural area, and we'll see what we can do to make sure we can amend it. And one of the other things that we've brought in at the same time as the college-led training is an approach to remote supervision. So it used to be quite a strict rule about needing a supervisor on site or nearby for our trainees. Now, for the right trainee who's got adequate experience and support, we can actually offer remote supervision models, for example, for a trainee on Lord Howe Island, which enables the communities to get the medical services that they need, but at the same time, that trainee getting the support and supervision that they need under this remote supervision model. So we're very pleased to be hitting the ground running this year and delivering what we promised.
With the national pathway, that would streamline a lot of the policy level types of things. But there might be some concerns about that being a one size fits all model. But as I understand it, the training's done in a distributed design manner. So that goes all the way from that national governance level, all the way down to trainees and individual organisations. So can you run through a little bit about how that works?
We talk about the benefits of national consistency, but at the same time that we've built in flexibility to take into account local factors. And a good example of that is what we call the flexible funding scheme. So the Department of Health has very generously given a flexible funding package where particularly remote communities or rural communities that have had hard to fill places are able to have a package that's designed specifically for them or tailored for them. So it might be that we can use additional funding for supervision for the trainees, for everything from housing to education assistance, so that we can actually make sure that when we're thinking about Mildura, or we're thinking about the Grampians, or we're thinking about the back of Bourke, that even though we've got a national, I guess, approach, that we use local knowledge, the local medical educators, the local doctors and communities, and actually find out what we need to do in that town at that time to meet those needs. So yes, it's distributed. Yes, there's a national approach. Yes, there's a distributed approach, but the inbuilt flexibility means that particularly for the remote communities and the rural hard-to-fill spots, we are actually taking a practice-by-practice and community-by-community approach. We're really pleased as a college this year. This has been a great year to be in general practice. I'm a general practice owner, a rural GP. We've had a federal government budget and communications and rhetoric that shows that they're interested and invested in primary care. We as a college have got control back of our training and we're able to implement policies straight away. We're about to get a big change in the bulk billing incentives as of 1st of November. There's a real enthusiasm and vibe within general practice now to say that we've got a good future. Yes, we've certainly been in the media in the past talking about how we need more support for our general practice. But now, more than ever, it's a great time to enter into what is absolutely the best specialty, that's ready to meet community needs, because there's a lot to be hopeful about and a lot to be enthusiastic about.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about the study and training opportunities across regional Victoria by heading to monash.edu/medicine/rural-health. This episode was part of a series of conversations with doctors in regional Victoria. There's more episodes available which focus on a wide range of medical specialties. We're available anywhere you can find good podcasts. The Northwest Victoria and Gippsland Regional Training Hubs have commissioned this podcast to help medical students and junior doctors learn more about training and practicing medicine in regional Australia. There are hubs all across the country, and to find out where your nearest regional training hub is, visit the link in the episode show notes or just search regional training hubs. And finally, this podcast was brought to you by Monash Rural Health, presented by Patrick Laverick, that's me, and it was made possible by funding from the Rural Health Multidisciplinary Training Program at the Commonwealth Department of Health.